First, we start off with Sri Lokanath Goswami, who is technically speaking not one of the six Goswamis. If you see that picture on the altar, Sri Lokanath is not one of the six Goswamis, but he is one of the Goswamis that renovated Vrindavan. And then we did one on Sanatan Goswami and Rupa Goswami, who were two brothers that joined Lord Chaitanya's movement. And then this week we're going to cover two Goswamis, and they both are Bhatta, Gopal Bhatta and Raghunath Bhatta. But first, just to recap, Krishna himself appeared in Vrindavan 5,000 years ago, and he exhibited his earthly pastimes. And it said that those with purified vision, they can still associate with Krishna, still see his pastimes, and still join those pastimes even today. Even though to external purposes, Vrindavan looks like a suburb of Delhi, with satellite dishes and condos and guarded gates and all kinds of congested traffic. Even it's changed a lot since I was there. The first time I was there was in 1973. There weren't cars in Vrindavan. There weren't cars. Not in Vrindavan itself. You didn't have any motorized vehicles. You went everywhere by bicycle rickshaw. Now it is just jam-packed with cars and horns and exhausts. But still, if you have transcendental vision, you'll see it as even now, today, Krishna's pastimes are going on in Vrindavan. And even the pigs and the dogs and the hogs are so purified. Maybe they were offenders in their last life, but in this life, they got to take birth in such a way as to be always in touch with the sacred dust of Vrindavan, which touched Lord Krishna's feet and even is now touching it in a spiritual sense. And so by virtue of, you know, the dogs being in the dust and rolling in the dust and the hogs rooting in the dust and all like that, they're going to go back to the spiritual world in the next life. So no one can calculate how holy is even every single dust particle of Vrindavan. But the area itself got overrun and neglected. It was restored several hundred years after Krishna's departure by his grandson, whose name was Brajanabha. But history repeated itself, and as we mentioned before, the area got overrun. The Muslims actually came in and broke a lot of the temples. And when Lord Chaitanya appeared 500 years ago, which is about 500 years after the Muslim desecration, the whole area was overgrown, and none of the spots of Krishna's pastimes were identifiable. Maybe through local lore or some tribals, a little bit of vague scriptural references, a place where there's a tulsi grove growing, a place where a cow comes and deposits udder milk in a certain place. That's how we learned last week that Rupa Goswami found the Govindaji deity, because it was a place where a cow would just go every day and leak the milk from her udder. And that's where they'd hidden the deity from the Muslim rampagers. Lord Chaitanya's, one of his main priorities was to get this place excavated. And in fact, today, I guess the Goswamis did their job so good that, you know, half of Delhi lives in Vrindavan. And they go and visit all the places of pilgrimage. So this is Raghunath Bhatta Goswami. Lord Chaitanya sent Tapana Mishra from Bengal to go and live in Banaras. He was a Brahmin. And Lord Chaitanya had a reason for that. There was a big impersonalistic philosopher named Prakasananda Saraswati in Benares with 10,000 disciples. And Lord Chaitanya knew that in the future he would convert Prakasananda and all of his disciples. So he asked Tapana Mishra to go to Varanasi and establish a household, and that would be Lord Chaitanya's base for preaching in Varanasi. Varanasi was then and is now a great center of impersonalistic learning. So Raghunath Bhatta Goswami is born in 1505 as the son of Tapana Mishra. So Lord Chaitanya then came again in 1511. He went in, I assume, in 1505 to convert Prakasananda and all the 10,000 disciples. And that's where he met Raghunath Bhatta Goswami as a little baby. And Lord Chaitanya then again passed through Benares in 1511. At that time, he took Raghunath Bhatta, a boy of 8 years, on his lap, and he instructed the father for 10 days. Now, there are a number of instances where the parent is being instructed and the child is learning also. It's mentioned that Prahlad Maharaj, before he was born, while he was in the womb of his mother, Narada Muni was instructing Krishna consciousness to his mother, and she wasn't particularly paying attention, but he was all ears inside of the womb. So when he took birth, he was already a realized devotee. So Raghunath Bhatta presumably listened to all this 10 days worth of instruction which Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave to his father. Raghunath Bhath Goswami was known as the Kirtan Acharya. You think Hanuman and Jai Krishna are good? This guy is good. The Kirtan Acharya. While living briefly in Jagannath Puri, he satisfied Lord Chaitanya with his nectarine cooking. This is a good man to have around. This is the ideal temple devotee, you know. Boy, I'll tell you. I'd chant 64 rounds a day if we get someone like that, you know. Krishna. His nectarine cooking, humble service attitude, and his excellent kirtan performance. Following Lord Chaitanya's request, Raghunath Bhatta moved to Vrindavan and became an intimate friend of Srila Rupa Goswami, whom he pleased by reciting each verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam in three different sweet-sounding and melodious tunes. He never talked nonsense or worldly matters, but always engaged in hearing about Krishna 24 hours a day. Remember from last week, Rupa Goswami was a poet. He was a poet. He wrote dramas and poetry. And Raghunath also he's a creative artistic. He's a singer. He's a cook. And his particular expertise, every one of the Goswamis, you'll notice as we've gone through them, has had a particular forte. And Raghunath Bhatta Goswami's forte is the Srimad Bhagavatam. He knew the whole Srimad Bhagavatam by heart. And not only did he know it by heart, he could sing it by memory. And not only could he sing it by memory, but he could sing it in three different tunes. That's 20,000 verses that he had committed to memory. Okay, it's changing. Yes, all right. So while he was in Puri, he visited twice. He stayed 8 months each time. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave him his own Kunti Mala. The neck beads from around his own neck he gave to Raghunath Bhatta. And he gave the Tulsi garland the next time. And then he sent him to Vrindavan. And this is Raghunath Bhatta Goswami here on the right-hand side. And that's the famous Jagannath temple in Puri with its big domes and spires. Now in Vrindavan, he was trained in the Bhagavatam. And he flooded the area with Bhagavatam Katha, discoursing and singing beautifully the verses. There's a system, a tradition called Bhagavad Sapta, where someone comes and they recite the Bhagavatam for 7 days, like 6-7 hours a day. And then on the last day, they'll do it continuously for 10 hours. And it's not just recitation. They'll have the harmonium. They may have backup singers and musicians. It's really engaging. Now, there's not many of them done in English, and I'm not sure even in English it would have the same rhythm and appeal. But for instance, Murari Bapu is the most famous Bhagavat reciter, and he's filled Madison Square Garden a couple of times with crowds. He'll get 20,000-30,000 people when he comes, and he does it all by heart, all by memory. So this is Raghunath. He was doing the recitation of the Srimad Bhagavatam with musical accompaniment, commentary, storytelling. You can just imagine, it's like nobody would watch TV if there was something like this going on. Nobody would want to watch TV. He wrote no books. He was always engaged in smarnam, which means remembering Krishna, and kirtan, and he never talked ill of anyone. If you would ever start to say anything bad about any other Vaishnava, he would stop you, and he would say, he's chanting Krishna's names, so we cannot speak ill of him. He's doing Krishna's will. He was so close to Sanatan and Rupa that he died in the same year that Rupa and Sanatan died, which was in 1554. Now, this is the Govindaji temple. And it was built to house the Govindaji deity that Rupa Goswami found. And it was built by Man Singh after he talked to Rupa Goswami. But it's interesting that Man Singh, the great emperor, was actually a disciple of Raghunath Bhatt. He wasn't a Rupa Goswami disciple, but he was a disciple of Raghunath Bhatta Goswami. And after, I think it took 5,000 men 5 years to build this temple. And it opened in 1590. And for 100 years, it was the center, the main temple for hundreds and hundreds of miles around. People used to come from all over India to worship at this temple. And then as we mentioned last week, Aurangzeb from his capital in Agra, one evening he noticed a light that was higher in elevation than his own palace. And he said, "What is that light?" And they said, "Oh, that's a Hindu temple." So he sent his soldiers to break it down. And they broke the top four stories, but the last three stories, as they began to break in the earth, there began to be an earthquake, and they all sort of ran away in fear. This is a Samadhi Mandir. Samadhi Mandir of three Goswamis. I can't exactly read it there, but three Rasunath Bada Goswami, Raghunath Dasa Goswami, and Srila Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami. Three Goswami Samadhi Mandir. Another character that figures into this scenario is Parobhavananda Saraswati. He was the brother. Now we're shifting to the story of Gopal Bhatta Goswami. He's the other Bhatta that we're going to talk about. And to learn the story of Gopal Bhatta, we go to South India, to Sri Rangam, famous South Indian temple. Lord Chaitanya himself spent 4 months at Sri Rangam during the rainy season. And when you go there, there's still Lord Chaitanya's footprints in the temple itself, right at the entrance that everyone can see. So while Lord Chaitanya spent the 4 months of the rainy season, I'm not sure what year that was, he stayed at the house of Venkata Bhatta, whose brother was Parobhavananda Saraswati. And Venkata Bhatta was one of the chief priests of the Ranganath temple. Even today, it's a fabulous temple. It's the largest Vishnu temple in the world. They employ hundreds and hundreds of priests. And these brothers were among the two top priests of the temple. Parabhananda Saraswati was a great favorite of Lord Chaitanya, and he was the uncle of the child who was later to grow up as Gopal Bhatta Goswami. These are some of the qualities of Parabhavananda Saraswati. Quote, he was full of love for the devotees. He was also very austere and renounced. His handsome form was very pleasing to see, and he was also a learned poet and scholar. No one could compare with him in the arts of singing, dancing, and playing musical instruments. Everyone who heard his eloquent speech became filled with happiness. These are the incomparable glories of Prabodhananda Saraswati. After Lord Chaitanya left South India and returned to Jagannath Puri and Orissa, Prabodhananda Saraswati became wrapped in always remembering him within his heart. Prabodhananda left his home in Rangakshetra and traveled to Sri Vrindavan, where he stayed in the forest of Kamyavana and where he was soon met by his nephew, Gopal Bhatta Goswami. One time, Lord Chaitanya, when he sent, I think the story's in here, but it was the renovation of Vrindavan almost became like a family business. The uncle, Parvananda Swami, the nephew, and they were all, and then the brothers, you know, Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, like a transcendental business that was engaged in by some related family members. So some of the works of Prabodhananda Saraswati are Chaitanya Chandamrita. That was written actually before the appearance of Lord Chaitanya. And it was said of that book, it's not possible for any jiva to reach the shore of Radha Prema, which even Lakshmi and Brahma covet. In other words, even Lakshmi, she would like to enter into the pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan, but because she has this opulent body of a great queen and with opulence, she can't, in that form, go to Vrindavan. Because the mood of Vrindavan is not imperial, it's rural, it's intimate. And the inhabitants of Vrindavan, although they're wealthier in terms of love of God than anybody, they're dressed very simply, and the lifestyle is apparently a very, very simple rural agrarian lifestyle. So the goddess of fortune, she envies the love that Krishna shares between himself and the devotees, gopis, but she personally can't enter into that area because of her opulence. It is said that she entered, but she had to change her body in order to do that. These are some of the works of Prabodhananda Saraswati, Vrindavan Mahimamrita, Shangita Madhava, Gita Kavya, Ascharya Rasa Prabandha, Sri Stuti Vyakya, Sri Kama Bija, Kama Gayatri Vyakya, Sri Navadvip Satakam, Sri Govinda Gita Vyakyam, Gopala Tapanitiki, and Radha Rasa Shudhanidhi. Now, Gopal Bhatta Goswami, born in 1500, in the family of Sri Dravida Brahmins, the son of Venkata Bhatta, who was a Brahmin priest of the Sri Rangam temple in Tamil Nadu. Now this is a different part of India altogether, because the north, all the temples were broken down by the Muslims. But there's a big mountain range that bisects India, and then Tamil Nadu is along the eastern coast. So the Muslims came in from the northwest, and Tamil Nadu is in the southeast. So it's the furthest from the point of incursion. And if you enjoy seeing ancient temples, then that's the place to go, because they weren't able to wreak as total a destruction because of the distance they had to travel, the lengthening of their supply lines, and also this big mountain that they had to get over in order to get there. So Tamil Nadu is definitely the place of temples. And one of the most magnificent ones, if not the most magnificent, is Sri Rangam. Even today, it's a full-on engagement. So Prabodhananda Saraswati became the spiritual master of his nephew, Gopal Bhatta. In 1511, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited Sri Rangam, dancing in ecstasy before Lord Ranganath. Now, the deity, Ranganath, very interesting. We've been there. We've seen the deity on several occasions. Actually, I've been there several times. And it's a huge, 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 huge deity. I think it's, 18, 22 feet long. Yeah, made of black marble. And he's lying down, and he's resting on Anantashesha. Ranganath means who's lying down. Nath means controller. Ranga means, I'm not sure what that means, reclining Lord or something like that. So this is a huge, huge deity. Worshipped forever since ancient times. And the deities in South India, it's interesting, probably for various reasons, they don't have heavy clothing on like we do here. They wear a lot of like armor, a lot of jewels, very simple cloth, a simple light cloth around the legs and the waist. Very rarely do they wear any upper cloth, but they'll have a lot of jewels and stuff. So the style of dress between North India and South India is quite different. And in fact, when you enter most of the Orthodox temples in South India, if you're a man, you can't wear your shirt. You have to go in shirtless. And some of the temples are strict. You have to go in traditional dress. But they'll have a stall where you can wrap a dhoti around your pants and you can take your shirt and you can check things off. And if the ladies need something, they'll also wrap them up. And you can, in this way, go and visit the temple. So this is the largest Vishnu temple in the world. It's 157 acres. There are 27 domes, and there's said to be more than 1 million carvings on the various gopurams, the various entrances to the temple. Here's a picture of it, of one of the gopurams here. At the age of 11, Lord Chaitanya stayed in Gopal Bhatta's home for 4 months, and he planned Gopal Bhatta's future life. He instructed Venkata that Lakshmi cannot approach Krishna because of Aishwarya, which means opulence. She must approach with Braja Bhava, that means simple humility. The Braja Basis, in the inhabitants of Vrindavan, they're not aware of Krishna as God. In other words, their love is unconditional. They just love Krishna because of who he is. The residents of Dwarka, the palaces of Dwarka, the residences of the kingdom of God, you might say, they're conscious that they're worshiping God in all opulence and awe and majesty. See, that mentality cannot penetrate Vrindavan. The inhabitants of Vrindavan are so much more and unconditionally in love with God that they don't even know he's God. They just love Krishna. They just love their little Krishna, that's all. So the gopis asked Narayan, and this is a story that illustrates the simple love of the gopis. One time, Krishna disappeared to the gopis. He disappeared to the gopis. And they were looking everywhere for him in Vrindavan. They were asking the bumblebees, have you seen Krishna? They were asking the birds, have you seen Krishna? They were asking the deer, have you seen Krishna? They were looking behind the trees. And Krishna appeared. He changed his form as Narayan, the four-armed Vishnu form of opulence, of Aishwarya, the form that lives in Dwarka, that's worshipped by all the other queens. And so he placed himself on the forest path. So when the gopis came running down the forest path looking for Krishna, they saw Narayan. They saw Narayan. So what did they do? Did they say, oh, here's Krishna, we were looking for you? No, they weren't interested in that opulent feature of Krishna. They weren't interested in worshipping God because he's God. What they did was they bowed down to him, they offered him respects, and then they asked him, Narayan, have you seen Krishna passing this way? Narayan is the husband of the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, and he's none other than Krishna, but the gopis aren't interested in Krishna in that feature. the Rath Yatra celebration that we observe every year, there was an eclipse at Kurukshetra, and it was the one time when all the inhabitants of Vrindavan went to Kurukshetra and they met Krishna many, many years after Krishna had left Vrindavan to make the world safe and kill the various demons. So when they go to Kurukshetra and they see Krishna as a great king, all they want to do is they want to bring Krishna back to Vrindavan, throw away his crown, throw away his opulence, and just have him as their, you know, just sport with him again. And the whole Rath Yatra celebration is pulling Krishna back to Vrindavan. Pulling Krishna back to Vrindavan with that simple, unconditional love for the gopis. So Gopal Bhatta was not only a great scholar, but he was expert in poetry, dance, and music as well. And here's a picture of Gopal Bhatta Goswami. All the Goswamis you see, they're very youthful looking, they're effulgent, they're all shaven headed, and they always have their bead bags at hand. And I think most of them lived into their late 90s or 100. Some of them died as early as 85, at the young age of 85. So once Gopal Bhatta and Goswami's parents died, he went to Vrindavan. He studied some time in Vrindavan. He made a trip to Nepal. And one day when he was taking bath, Nepal is where all the shilas, the sacred rocks that you can paint and worship instead of Krishna. If you can't do the opulent Krishna worship, you can get from Nepal in the Himalayas in a certain place, the shilas, Shalagram, it's a village called Shalagram, and the rocks in the river at that point are considered actually worshipable. You can keep them with you, and when you're traveling, you can paint Krishna eyes on them, and you can worship those little shilas. And the worship is not so strict. You don't have to worry about making offenses. So in the Kali Gandakini River, he dipped his water pot into the water, and 12 shilas mysteriously entered his pot. He just wanted some water, and 12 stones entered his pot when he pulled it up. And he took them out, and he put them back in the water. And then he went to enter his water pot again, and the 12 stones were there. And then he did a third time, and the 12 stones were there. So he thought that, you know, someone is trying to tell me something like that. So he kept those 12 shilas and began to worship them. And one day, he had a desire to decorate one of his Shalagram shilas, seat him on a swing, and serve him as other devotees. And a thought came to him, if he only had arms and legs like a deity. And one of those shilas transformed himself into the little gorgeous Radharaman deity in order to fulfill the desire of Gopal Bhatta to swing him and to dress him with arms and legs and so on and so forth. So that was a deity manifest from a Shalagram Shila in 1542. And that deity is still worshipped today in Vrindavan in great opulence. We'll just see some slides on that in a moment. So Radha Raman, actually it says the deity, it was a Krishna deity, but it was Lord Chaitanya. It was Lord Chaitanya satisfying his desire, and he's manifesting as a Krishna deity. And there's no Radha by his side, because in Lord Chaitanya is combined Radha Krishna. This is the Radharaman temple. And when the Muslims came to smash the temples in Vrindavan, they missed this temple. Can you guess why? They missed this temple. Yeah, it's a little bit back in the streets, but it also, they mistook it for a house. They mistook it for a residence. They didn't identify it directly for a temple. And so they didn't smash it down. And the deity obviously was taken away in hiding. But when the temple remained intact, they brought the deity. So that deity, of all the deities, all the other Govindaji deity, Radha Vinod, and all the other deities, Madana Gopal, they all had left. They were hidden, some of them for hundreds of years, until they were rediscovered, and then many of them brought back to Vrindavan. But the Radha Raman deity was the only deity of those Goswami deities that never left Vrindavan. And again, manifest from a shila in 1542. Isn't that just one gorgeous deity? Isn't that one gorgeous deity? Just very, very small. Very, very small. So the appearance place, this is where the deity manifests. It's next to the temple beside Gopal Bhatta's samadhi. This is where Gopal Bhatta's body is resting, in that little samadhi in between the arches, and in that very point is the place where the deity appeared. Here's what I was saying before. You can see the Radharaman deity on his throne. Everything is silver. All the implements are silver. And in some of the temples, some of degradation has taken place. Families have taken over the temples and they worship the temples. And a lot of times they'll just do it for the income and spend the income on their family affairs, and the deity suffers because of it. But that never happened in Radharaman. The deity worship always was first class. The Goswamis who run that temple, the descendants of Gopal Bhatta, they've always done a great job. All the implements are silver. The worship is first. Prabhupada said when devotees first started going to Vrindavan with him, and I don't know when it was, 67 or 68, he said he sent them to this temple to learn how to do deity worship properly. So this is what I was mentioning here. The fires for cooking in this temple kitchen have been burning continuously for 435 years since the deity was installed. This is so no foreign elements such as matches are used for ignition purposes. And as I mentioned, it looks like just another house on the street. And so when Aurangzeb's soldiers attacked, they didn't disturb this temple because they thought it was a residence. Again, the standard of worship at the samadhi and temple is exemplary, and Srila Prabhupada wanted his disciples to learn deity worship from local pujaris. Gopal Bhatta Goswami wrote the ultimate book on deity worship called Hari Bhakta Vilas. And there's so much more. I mean, we don't do much here in Spanish Fork. L.A. Temple, Los Angeles Temple is the standard for deity worship. If you're interested in seeing how deity worship, the standard for ISKCON, come with us to the L.A. Rath Yatra first Sunday in August and just see the deity worship in L.A. It's unbelievable. There are rituals for waking up the deity, for putting the deity bed. There are six artis a day. There's a different dress for the deity for every day of the year. It's been years and years since they've had 365 dresses for the deities. But what's happened is when one gets old, they auction it off and they get another one. So they're constantly recycling and upgrading. But even so, even with that standard of deity worship, Prabhupada said that if we were to read Hari Bhakti Vilas, we would faint. We would faint. Because it's so much more elaborate. It so much engages your life around the worship of Krishna that there's no room for anything else. In that temple are Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's kopan, his midsection cloth, and his asana, his seat. Gopal Bhatta Goswami brought these from Jagannath Puri. They are brought out to be seen by the public three or four times a year. The asana, which is a low sitting place, is black wood and is about 12 inches by 10 inches. Diksha, Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, they had an arrangement that they didn't send preachers off unless they were initiated, because they thought without the Diksha initiation, you wouldn't have the connection you need to go out to a foreign place with one or two companions and spread love of God and to face all the adversities that you'd have to face. Sometimes you're not going to eat. People are not always going to listen to you. Sometimes you're going to get beaten and chased and all like that. So Diksha, connection to a bona fide spiritual master, was considered essential. There were many people who were otherwise qualified, but they would not send them out to preach until they had gotten a bona fide spiritual master with whom they had an intimate connection. So Raghunath Bhatta Goswami ended up giving Diksha mostly from the Bengalis who would come to Vrindavan. And Gopal Bhatta ended up giving initiation from the ones from the south and from the western side, like Gujarat and Maharati and everything like that. Then he gave the worship of Radharaman to Damodar Goswami, who came from Gandaki and married. In other words, he emigrated from Gandaki and he married, and that family was given the perennial worship of Radharaman. And even today, that family is a great family. They're known as the Goswamis. They actually took the name Goswamis. And I was, Srivas Goswami was at Harvard Divinity School when I was at the BB Library Party. And when we did Harvard, we visited Harvey Cox, who was the dean of the Harvard Theological School at the time. And we went over to where the students were domiciled, and we sat on the porch, and we talked theology. And Srivas Goswami was there. He was from India taking the PhD in theology from Harvard University. And he was on the porch with us. And some of the Western students, there was about 15 Western students, and then there was this Goswami from this temple. And I was there, and my partner, and then Harvey Cox was there also. So they started asking Srivas Goswami about Krishna worship, because it wasn't part of their curriculum, of course. And he started elucidating Krishna worship. And it went on for about an hour, and it was amazing. This man was so erudite, so scholarly, and so fixed in devotional service, that the jaws of these harp, there was nothing in our Judeo-Christian tradition which could compare to the sophistication and the depth of realization of this individual. And they were just amazed. I was present there, and I consider myself privileged to have been there on that. So usually when things are given over hereditarily, they degrade. You know, when people inherit, the descendants of Mohammed, you know, when the popes got their kids to be popes, all that is usually a cause for a lot of corruption. But it's interesting to note that over the last 500 years, all the descendants from Damodar Goswami who have kept the temple have been very pure and very articulate and very pakka. So another prominent disciple of Raghunath Bhatta, or Gopal Bhatta, was Srinivas Acharya. This is the last slide. The works of Gopal Bhatta. He passed away in 1586 at the age of 85. As I said, he's probably the youngest to pass away at 85. The work for which he's most known is a work on deity worship. It is the ultimate compendium on deity worship, the rituals and practices of worshiping the deity. That was finished in 1541. Another book was called the Satasham Darba, systematized by Jiva Goswami, whom we're going to talk about next week. And these are just titles of some of the works. Sat Priyashara Deepika, Shamsakara Deepika, Krishna Balaba. I could try and stumble through the translations of these, but it would make us go over our time. So there we have a little thumbnails of Raghunath Bhatta Goswami and Gopal Bhatta Goswami. Next week we should finish with the last two Goswamis, who are Jiva Goswami and then Raghunath Das Goswami.